Fire engineering podcasts are sponsored by MSA. Firefighters want to be connected to each other, to dispatch, and to their commanders. MSA has created Lunar, a wireless, handheld device that includes thermal imaging, firefighter ranging, motion alarm, and cloud technology with GPS. It's part of the new connected firefighter platform from MSA. Learn more at msafire.com.
Well, welcome to Fire Service Court Radio. We recognize that voice on the introduction. Thank you very much, Bobby Halton, and the staff of Fire Engineering. And tonight, you've just got me, John Murphy, retired Deputy Fire Chief, Attorney at Law here in the state of Washington. Ordinarily, we would have Chip Comstock from Ohio, Kurt Barone from Providence, and Brad Pinsky from New York, but they are all predisposed on other projects, so they're unable to be with us tonight. A couple of unpaid announcements is that please remember that in April we have FDIC in Indianapolis, and so all four of us will be speaking on legal issues affecting the fire service, along with a number of other firefighters, fire officers talking about their areas of discipline. And at the same time, the iWomen's, or Women in Fire Now, will be having their conference on Sunday and Monday, the first 2 days of the conference. And hopefully you all can make it to that as well. They always have a great presentation and a great show, affects all disciplines in the fire service, not just women. So again, thanks for going to FDIC if you went last year, and hopefully we'll see you again this year in the mid part of April, Indianapolis, Indiana. Most recently, usually what happens is we have this sort of a dialogue of, you know, what are we going to talk about, and those sorts of things, and so we usually go to Kurt Barone's website, which is always full of information about recent litigation or issues affecting the fire service. And much of it has to do with more personnel issues, discrimination, workplace harassment, and those sorts of things. And recently, the Supreme Court is now discussing and arguing about the LGBT community and whether their rights are protected under the Civil Rights Act. And so I thought it would be a good segue into talking about discrimination, diversity and inclusion in the fire service. And I think, you know, my wife, Beth Murphy, Dr. Beth Murphy, and I have given a type of class like this to the iWomen's Conference a couple of years ago. And it was, you know, tried to overturn or change behavior in the fire service, you know, after like 200 years of doing things the same way. And I think modern society has taken this to a point where we need to be more diverse and inclusive in our discipline in the fire service. And when you take a look at statistics in the fire service, the predominant group in the fire department are white males. And the next are African-Americans or Hispanics. And then there are women, which account for about 4%, and then Asian Americans are less than 1%. And so we talk about, you know, do we reflect our community? I would have to say not necessarily. And so I think what we're going to try to do tonight is to talk about diversity and inclusion and what it actually looks like. And so when we talk about cultural diversity, we have to kind of take a look at all the different factors that go into a culturally diverse environment. And so gender, race, we know about those, belief systems. We certainly know about those with our religious upbringing or belief systems that we have developed as kids, you know, through our development period. And maybe even some of the neighborhoods that we live in have a certain way of looking at, you know, life. And people that, you know, affect you on a daily basis or who do move in or don't move in to your neighborhood because it's not, you know, their neighborhood. Certain skill sets we always look for, which talks about, you know, issues in the diverse areas. Gender identity, which again is one of those controversial topics. Do we see people in transition in the fire service? And yes, we do. And how do we react to those individuals who are transitioning? And I can tell you right now, it's not very well, because they don't look like, you know, the majority of the firefighters, or they don't act like the majority of the firefighters. So it puts them in sort of a, you know, a hostile environment, which again is going to get us as firefighters and your department into trouble. Age, certainly, life experiences, as we said, a lot more military people coming in the service with years of experience in life. Different combat experiences. Some may have PTSD or depression or other issues that they were affected by during combat scenarios or being in the military. So there's a lot that go into this sort of cultural diversity pie. When you talk about inclusion and diversity, you usually talk about those in the same sentence, and we most of us don't know exactly what they mean, right? So inclusion requires that we study the ways in which differences have been constructed, accesses denied, stereotypes perpetuated, and exclusions justified. And so when I talk to women in the fire service or African-Americans or Hispanics, and, you know, the occasional Asian firefighter calls and says, you know, I've been excluded from activities in my department. I've been excluded from certain training activities. I've been excluded from the social environment that, you know, we depend on so much in our fire service. I've just been excluded. So we need to talk about, you know, how we can incorporate and integrate individuals that maybe don't look like us and don't have the same belief systems as we do into our fire departments, right? And our fire departments, because we always talk about, well, the fire department's like a giant family. And, you know, and Beth and I look at each other and we look at and we say to each other, well, if they're a family, we don't treat family like we treat some of our fellow firefighters. And so sometimes we treat our family worse, but we don't want to treat family members that are part of our fire service, you know, worse because of they don't look like you, they don't talk like you, they don't cook like you, they don't dress like you. They're not you. And so get over the fact that these people are not, they're not you. Diversity, interestingly enough, a study has been done as a fact of life in the United States. So we're a diverse group of people. Projections have shown that by 2050, there are going to be no racial or ethnic groups will make up as much as 50% of the U.S. population. And so this is a U.S. Census Bureau study done in 2009, and it declared that the United States will become a nation of minorities. And so there's not going to be one predominantly dominant group in the United States like there is now, which is Caucasians, right? So a famous person other than my wife said, diversity is being invited to the party, right? Inclusion is being asked to dance at the party. So diversity of the job. So think about that. You bring somebody in and then you ignore them. So you want to bring somebody in, you want to dance with them, you know, you want to incorporate those individuals into your daily activities in the fire service and even off the job as well. Fire service demographics are changing, right? As you see more younger firefighters coming in, maybe more women coming in, more people of color coming in, but we don't change as fast as our communities. And so you take a look at the demographics of your community, there's some rapid swings in you know, the different ethnic groups that are coming in to our communities, large or small. And we're seeing a exodus from the larger cities to the smaller communities for lots of different reasons. Jobs, taxes, schools are better maybe in the suburbs. And so it's creating a conflict on both sides. In the cities, there's a aging infrastructure, which adds to a fire load, abandoned buildings. And then the small rural suburban communities, there's an influx of people, so it puts a demand on existing public services, including schools, fire departments, police departments, you know, library systems, and even down to the septic, you know, sewer systems in your communities, including water demands. And so there's been a big influx and a shift in populations around the country. And so, you know, the city fathers and city managers are trying to rapidly adjust to those changing climates, but the fire service is a little bit slow. So, and you know, not changing into fire service, I think, is going to harm us in the long run. We hate change. You know, firefighters hate two things. They hate change and they hate the way things are. And so I think it's part of our DNA to resist change. And sometimes, and I said this at a fire chiefs conference a couple of weeks ago in South Carolina, is that sometimes people need to leave the department in order to affect change in your organization. So the role of diversity and inclusion is a move away from tolerance to acceptance and respect. So merely tolerating somebody really doesn't cut it. So we need to take a look at, you know, find the good parts about people coming into your organization. You know, be a part of that sort of hiring package, be a part of the interviewing process, the, you know, creating the applications to try to get the best and the brightest and the most qualified of your community into your fire department. And we can do this and continue the diverse and inclusive atmosphere that we need, that we will see in our department. And I think, you know, there's been a number of individuals who have written about this that said, you know, a diverse work group adds a different dimension in problem solving and teamwork, because people bring in different skills into an organization, which I think benefit an organization in the long run. And so there are some laws protecting diversity and inclusion. And so under the federal laws, employers can't discriminate against employees on the basis of, you know, race, gender, religion, national origin, pregnancies. There's been a number of cases around the country where pregnancy discrimination has cost departments millions of dollars. And it creates polarity and divisiveness in an organization when you're being sued by your own firefighters. And if you take a look at Kurt Verone's site or other websites or other resource sites, we don't get sued. The fire department doesn't get sued for burning people's houses down very often, or failure to effect a rescue. We do get sued for those things, but not at the frequency we get sued for, you know, discrimination, workplace harassment, bullying, and those sorts of things. So some of these laws that you have heard about before, but I remind you that they're still out there, is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which was rewritten in 1991 with some amendments. Now, we do have the Equal Pay Act of 1963, where women in much of the workforce, not so much our workforce, there's a disparate pay scale for women workers as opposed to men workers. Most fire departments are under a contract or have an agreement that there's parity in pay across the board between men and women, or, you know, people of color. Doesn't make any difference. The Civil Rights Act created a protected class, and some of you may scratch your head and say, well, what the heck is a protected class? And so remembering that the Civil Rights Act of 64 is the Anti-Discrimination Act, and there are certain people that were identified as being protected under this because they weren't protected before and they were being discriminated against, not only in our service, but in every discipline, you know, from private sector to public sector. And the protected classes are age, race, national origin, religious beliefs, gender, disability, pregnancy, and veterans status. And some state laws sort of expanded on those, so they not only met, but now they're exceeding what the federal laws are. So we're looking at gender identity, sexual orientation, some protect political ideology, and then most people will protect any service in the like the National Guard or the State Guard, or if you get deployed and those sorts of things. We also have to remember the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, protecting people who are disabled. And sometimes we will have a candidate that may have a missing limb or may have some other learning disability and those sorts of things. And departments need to make reasonable accommodations in order to accept those individuals into your organization. And so the key word is reasonable, reasonable. So is reasonable putting a $100,000 elevator into your old fire station to accommodate somebody? No, that is not reasonable, and I don't think there's a court in the world that's going to say that's a reasonable accommodation to bring somebody who may be in a wheelchair or on crutches into your organization. But a reasonable accommodation is maybe somebody has a missing limb. So we'll see some military individuals come in and got caught up in an IED explosion. They're missing a lower limb or an arm. And so the question is, what is a reasonable accommodation for these? And so we have to take a look at the essential functions of the job. And are these individuals able to do the essential functions of the job? And if the answer is yes, and they can demonstrate that, then, you know, we need to make a reasonable accommodation for those individuals to come in. So just think about, you know, all the laws that are out and on the books, laws that, you know, the Verones and the Comstocks and the Pinskys and the Murphys teach about all the time. And so the question is, you know, does litigation change the behavior of the fire service? And, you know, I would say no, because we continue to see all this litigation going on with these huge awards, as I said. But we need to change the way we behave. And litigation is certainly a motivator when you're losing, you know, $3 million for a lack of lactation room, as we see in Tucson, or in Cook County, 14 years of discrimination against a female firefighter results in an $11 million judgment against the department. And those are huge awards. And a lot of times they're unnecessary. And actually, I would go out on a limb and say every time they're unnecessary. So we need to understand the laws. We also need to understand that we need to have policies. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we also need to enforce the policies that we put into place. So there's a lot of federal organizations and even state organizations that have a section of their group, such as the EEO or the state, like the Human Rights Division, for an example, for the state of Washington, has an arm that you can file a complaint. And when you see those complaints being filed at the state level or the federal level, to me, that represents a failure at the local level that the department didn't do enough to mitigate correct behavior in the organization. So these individuals who have been harassed, who are part of this process of harassment or discrimination, find no relief inside the organization, so they'll go outside. So just for your edification, the distinctions between EEO, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, affirmative action, and diversity inclusion is the Equal Opportunity Commission. This is the enforcement arm. So it enforces the civil rights provisions under Title VII and all of the other ADAs we talked about. So those organizations are your firefighters can file a complaint with. If they, you know, do an interview and they get a right to sue letter, you're going to go to court. And so the issue is can we prevent that sort of stuff? The term affirmative action is the effort to achieve parity in the workforce through outreach and eliminating barriers in hiring. And so some states have affirmative action in place. I think the state of Washington voted it out 20 years ago. Excuse me. And now it's on the ballot again to put it back on in November. We'll see what happens. And then finally, the terms diversity and inclusion is essentially levering the differences of the workforce to achieve better results. And as we said earlier, diversity isn't being invited to the party. And inclusion is being invited, asked to dance. So organizations tend to believe that diversity in the workplace is important, but about 30% have an agreed upon definition of diversity. And so it's not well defined or understood. And then usually if you're in a city, excuse me, or your organization is required to do some compliance training on diversity and inclusion, we put diversity in the silos of race or gender, and it really should be out of those silos and looking at it from a different perspective. And so, and the other thing that we found is that some organizations just check the box. If they're required to report to the feds that they've done diversity or inclusion training, then, you know, a lot of times we'll go to these classes. I'll go to these classes. And essentially, it's a check the box exercise. And so what did I learn out of it? I didn't learn anything out of it. So we need to take a look at diversity and inclusion differently and stop referring it as a problem. So it's a shift in mindset. Again, diversity and inclusion represent an opportunity for you to grow and to learn, and certainly for the organization. And then in order to make it an effective department program, the department needs to place diversity and inclusion in the center of an organization, and again, as a part of their strategic plan. So the question is, how do we get more diverse individuals into organization? In some communities, it's very, very difficult, right? Very difficult. And you're shaking your head going, we've done pretty much everything we can. There's just not a person of color in our community. You certainly do have women in your community. So are we not recruiting women into your fire service? And even if you may not have a person of color in your community, an African American or an Asian or a Hispanic, or, you know, somebody, I've gone around to the Southwest fire stations and I'm looking around for Native Americans and there aren't any. And so, you know, the question is, why not? And so the answer is, well, we attempt to recruit Native Americans, but this is not a lifestyle that they choose to engage in. And so my question to them is, why not? And they said, you're looking at it. You know, it's mostly white male firefighters and you know, it's just not attractive to people that don't look like them to come in because of, you know, maybe some past bad history that has gone on in that particular organization that is trying to recruit, you know, different people into their organization. So we need to take a look at recruitment. Again, strong emphasis on recruitment. You want to go out into the community where they're at and present an image where they can see themselves working. One of the things is to reduce litigation in an organization because that's unattractive as well. And so people read about what happens in your department in the newspaper or see it on TV. And so they say, well, why would I want to apply to that department when they have this track record of these sort of frequent litigations or complaints about, you know, firefighters filing complaints against the department or other firefighters in the organization? We want to remove any sort of barriers. And again, when you send out recruitment teams, you want to make sure that they represent the community that they're trying to bring in. So, excuse me. When my wife worked for one of the local fire departments here, Bellevue, which is a fine department, when she would go out as part of a recruiting package to these elementary schools or middle schools, and the girls would actually see that there was a woman firefighter on the engine company doing this recruiting, they'd always call her a girl fireman. So they say, you're a girl fireman. And Beth goes, well, yes, I am, but I'm a firefighter and I'm a woman firefighter and you can be one too. And so that sort of engenders that sort of, well, maybe if I grow up and graduate from high school, maybe go to college, I can be a firefighter, just like the woman that I saw when I was in sixth grade. So we want to add that image because that's a lasting image in your community. So promoting inclusion, again, starts with you. Starts with you guys. And so we do have some unconscious biases that we bring in based on, you know, where you grew up, your family, your religion, your friends, those sorts of things. And we bring that sort of bias to our workplace. And so we need to be consciously conscious of what our biases are. And so we try to eliminate those biases when we're at work. So the issue is you want to increase your awareness of your unconscious biasness. And so you ask, how do I do that? And I think that takes some emotional intelligence to figure out, you know, who I am, how I believe, what my belief system is, how I portray that system out to other people in my community or in my fire department, and try to, if it's a negative impact on people, you need to try to change that sort of behavior. And if it's a positive impact on people, then you want to continue that behavior and maybe set the example for other firefighters that haven't got to the point where they are as inclusive as you are in an organization. And then we want to practice good communication skills. And it's interesting to note that some studies would take a look at, is communication training better than diversity or inclusion training? And the studies show that actually communication training is far and exceeds the diversity and inclusion training, because we put people into silos and we react to people in that way. And sometimes our diversity and inclusion classes take a look at those people in silos, whereas communication classes enable us and allow us to communicate directly with people at their own level. So and we take a look at, you know, how we communicate. So your communication is filtered through your biases, right? So we see certain people and we communicate with them that way. We see other groups of people and we communicate differently with them. And we have expectations of each group and they're not the same, right? So if you're a white Caucasian male, the other white Caucasian males, we talk in a certain way. If we're a white Caucasian male, talk to African Americans or Hispanics or Asians, we talk a little bit differently, because I think we have an ingrained bias towards all groups, right? All groups. But we seem to factor into the fact that we filter, again, our communication through our biases. So, again, the protected classes of age, national origin, race, sometimes geographic locations. And so there's a bias, you know, when you travel around and you talk to people who are from different areas of the country, you have different expectations of what their attitudes are going to be. You have different, you know, they have different accents, which sometimes you can't understand what they're talking about. And so these are these sort of ingrained filters that we have on biases. And that stretches to work style, learning styles, economic status, their family system, and those sorts of things. So in our communications with people, we have to communicate a transparency that we're, you know, we're open to new ideas. We're open to new people coming into our organization that may not look like us. We're an inclusive, diverse group of people in our fire service. And so we need to take a look at how we respect individuals that are coming in. So the respect is sort of an interesting, I can't think of the exact word, but it has meaning to each letter. So respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. There's a song, right, from Gladys Knight and the Pips or somebody, which probably outdates most of us. But R is respect commonalities, right? So look for common ground with your coworkers. The E is embrace change. We're always going to have a changing workplace. And again, like I said, firefighters hate two things, change and the way things are. S is support others. So we want to be an advocate for others and shine a light on them, make them stand out in a good way. They're part of a team. And the P is promote positivity. The E is engage for understanding. So learn about other people's cultures, their food, their dress, their religion. You know, we're always learning. Every day, firefighters learn about something new. And so it's important that we engage in those sort of community cultures so we can be, you know, more educated as to how we deal with peoples of different cultures. So much of our call response are EMS calls. And so we see people from all over the world, right? All over the world. So we need to understand what their cultures are, so we don't, offend them by, you know, sometimes we can't touch certain individuals, or there may be some mannerisms that are offensive to people. So I think by our cultural education in our diverse environment, we're better able to manage patient care. So that's learn what your community is all about. Communicate clearly. And again, be mindful of your verbal and nonverbal communication. And I wrote a small article because I was just infuriated at the way some people talk at each other. And you have to remember that words matter. So words matter. You need to recognize what you're telling people or how you're talking to people, because we want to engage at a meaningful level and not just talk at people. Because again, you know, people talk at you, that you feel demeaned. And so when we do that to other people, that's a demeaning position to put them in. And so we need to have this sort of equal and level, you know, verbal playing ground, basically. And so when we talk with each other, we have a clear understanding of what we're saying and how we're being received and how they're being received as well. And then finally, trust. So the respect key is trust. And then build it by being curious, open, and respectful, right? Accept feedback without judgment. So benefits of an inclusive and diverse workplace are numerous, but a few high points are the quality workers are attracted to the organization, and we're always trying to bring in high-quality firefighters in our organization. It creates a work environment that allows everyone to reach their potential. And that's kind of what we're all about as we, you know, start out as a recruit firefighter all the way up to the chief in your organization. So we're looking at trying to reach your potential and by allowing others in your organization or helping others in your organization reach their full potential only benefits you and the organization. There's an expectation of better performance outcomes. We increase the retention rate of firefighters, employee morale, which we've all seen people down in the dumpers because things aren't going right or the attitude in the organization just literally sucks, sucks the energy out of you. So, you know, the morale of the organization is important on how you act and react in the organization. It certainly reduces complaints and grievances and ultimately lawsuits. And then, again, we have an increase in creativity if everybody is included. So what you need, I guess, to start a foundation is some good policy, good training, and a way to measure outcomes. And so good policies, you know, all four of us attorneys have talked about policies. There's a couple of companies out there that do policy management for organizations like Lexapro for one, or your insurance companies for another. There's lots of places out there that you can find good policies. And so you want to have a good policy that has a diverse and inclusive section in there. And then you must have good anti-harassment, anti-discrimination, anti-sexual harassment, anti-violence policies to help you promote your diversity in your organization. And your policies have got to define prohibited conduct or requires reporting of any prohibited conduct. And it's not just from the person that's the target, but if you're the witness of that, you can report it too. And certainly if you're the officer of the of that group, you need to stop the behavior. And if it doesn't stop, then you need to take disciplinary measures to make that happen. Because one of the things that I will say, and I'll reiterate, and I've done this before, is it's not the harassment that's problematic for the agency. It's a lack of action on the part of the agency that they did not do anything. And so people that are aggrieved or who are the target of all of this sort of harassing or disruptive behavior will go outside. And the EEOC or your human rights division of your various states are more than happy to pony up, you know, a lawsuit or legal action against your organization because of the failure of the organization to take positive action, to change behavior, to create policies, to educate other people in the organization that this behavior is not acceptable. And that all starts, again, with the fire chief, right? The fire chief's role is to create a diverse and inclusive work environment. And fire chief's obligation to the organization is to teach people in the organization what a diverse and inclusive workplace looks like. And the chief and other officers in the organization need to walk the talk. And so you just can't say, well, we have a policy, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, we have a policy. We've had the same policy for 15 years. Nobody does anything about it. It's pretty much worthless. And it is worthless. So if you have a policy, make sure it's in place and enforceable. The research done around with other non-public service agencies said that middle managers play a key role. And so it's you guys, it's the battalion chiefs, it's the captains, it's the lieutenants, it's you firefighters out there that have a key role. So everybody's got a role in some form or fashion in creating the diverse and inclusive workplace in which harassment, employment discrimination, and retaliation situations are avoided and discouraged. And so we need to speak up. So, you know, it's the old see something, say something advice. And so we do that for mental health issues. We do that, you know, TSA wants to, if you see a backpack at an airport, you know, see something, say something. It's the same in a workplace environment. So if you see something going on, say something right away. Don't wait, you know, for somebody else to take action. You need to take direct action as well. So the question is, how do we measure effectiveness? And so we have to develop some sort of a metric, you know, to track progress. So we take a look at, you know, the data points. And sometimes, again, like I talked about earlier, some of these training episodes are just, you know, check the box, a pencil whipping exercise where everybody doesn't learn anything and they're just, you know, PO'd that they had to take 30 or 45 minutes out of their day to sit in the class. So, excuse me, we want to do some meaningful metrics. And so take a look at the litigation, take a look at complaints, take a look at, you know, how people are interacting with each other, take a look at the morale of the organization. And we all can measure that sort of stuff. And there's various ways to make that happen, right? So I think it's up to us, it's incumbent on us to make that happen as well. So the other part is, you know, we do repetitive diversity training, or I do anti-harassment classes, bullying, hazing, those sorts of things around my home state. And we take a look at, you know, what are the long-term outcomes. So when I go back to different departments, I look at the faces. So we have different faces, right? We may have more minorities or more women, more black firefighters, more Hispanic firefighters, you know, just more of different than the white males that I usually see sitting in the audience. So for me, the organization has made a significant change in how they're attracting others in the community to be a member of your organization. And that's a metric as well. So the other term we use is best practices, best practices. So best practices, leadership commitment. So the fire chief and the upper management needs to make a commitment that, yes, we're going to promote a diverse and inclusive workplace. No, we don't accept any sort of harassment, bullying, hazing, any of those sorts of things. And we'll take swift action under our finely tuned policies to make that happen. We want to make sure that we create an equitable employment practice. We want outstanding recruitment outreach. And so send, you know, people that look different from you out into your community. And so does everybody have to be a firefighter to go out to a community to represent your department? No, you have people on your mechanical staff, probably. You have people on your front office staff, certainly in the firefighters, the fire marshal's office. I mean, there's a lot of people and a lot of different pools that you can draw from in your organization to send out to your community. Another best practice is coaching and counseling. I would always call it discipline, but my chief would always say, hey, we're going to be coaching and counseling. And I go, well, those two words, discipline is one word. He goes, no, we're not using that word anymore. And so I've learned the hard way that coaching and counseling is the term. I still think about discipline, but that's okay. And then mentoring as well. And so we talk about mentoring people who come into your organization or who are trying to learn a new skill that you have a perfect handle on. So we need to reach out and mentor individuals in your organization. And then we need to do early conflict resolution. And so, as I said earlier, if you see something, say something, and then intervene, you know, make a difference into what's going on into your organization. We also need to understand the federal law and the state law preventing discrimination. And we don't expect you to be a lawyer, but, you know, we all work in departments and everybody is a lawyer. So in my department, when I retired, we had 167 lawyers in my organization, and I always laugh. And they made some good arguments, but, you know, we want to make sure that you at least have a working knowledge of what the law is and certainly of your policy manual. And then you want to understand how policy reinforces existing laws, right? And then again, it's the preparation of your department for a change in culture, because it's changing. Whereas, you know, it's a tidal wave, and your organization has got to be ready for that sort of tidal wave. And above all, we need to communicate with each other. So some takeaways and getting close to the end here, and I appreciate you guys sticking this out, is that we need to know the difference between diversity and inclusion, right? So diversity is being invited to the dance. Inclusion is being, invited to the party. And inclusion is being invited to dance. And so high diversity with high inclusion ensures growth of the organization because they're going to be more attractive. We want to make sure that we put diversity and inclusion at the center of your strategic plan. And then ongoing training. It's just, you know, beyond diversity and teaches inclusion and acceptance, and certainly puts a high emphasis on communications between everyone in the organization, that we're free to talk to one another about whatever bothers us without being insulted or being rude about it. And then have ongoing evaluations and feedback as measuring successes of your organization, right? So, you know, so for the people that are out there that really like statistics and metrics, we want to think quantitatively as well as. So anyway, in closing, diversity policies provide a false sense of doing the right thing, right? So policy is not enough. And so the illusion of following the laws and regulations is equally not enough. So valuing, encouraging, and incorporating the uniqueness of your people supports growth in your organization. And that is everyone's responsibility. So without further ado, I want to thank you for taking the last 30 plus minutes with me talking about inclusiveness and diversity. I just want to open up that all the lawyers that are ordinarily on the show, Kurt Verone, Chip Comstock, Brad Pinsky, and myself, are all available for your phone calls. And I know that you do, because I get, you know, several phone calls a month from firefighters who listen to our podcasts. Please feel free to call. You know, we're here for you. If we don't know the answer, we'll find out. If we're not the right attorney, we'll find one for you. But we're here for you on the legal side, certainly. Remember FDIC in April. Remember Women in Fire, which has their conference in at the same time FDIC does in the early part of the week. And they're also doing a conference up in Spokane, Washington in 2020. So, you know, and they're opening up some calls for presentation. So if you're interested in presenting at that conference, take advantage of it. So take a look on their website. And then above all, be safe and treat each other with respect. And until next time, be careful.